We're on the air. Let's see how the broadcast gets from the studio to your home.
I just want to hear the music, that's all.
Is it too complicated to just keep my records in the category, okay? Just put the rock and roll in with the rock and roll. Put the R&B in with the R&B. I mean, you're not going to put Charlie Parker in with the rock and roll, would you?
What does it all mean?
I don't know. Who is Charlie Parker?
Yes!
Sounds Visual is a podcast featuring interviews and long-form conversations with DJs, crate diggers, record collectors, vinyl enthusiasts, beat makers, producers, and musicians. Welcome back to another episode of Sounds Visual Radio. My name is Justin. Thanks for tuning back in. My guest on the podcast today is JJ Whitefield. JJ is a Munich, Germany-based guitar player, bandleader, composer, and producer. JJ began his illustrious career as the co-founder of the Poets of Rhythm, perfecting the raw sounds and rhythms of 60s and 70s deep American funk. Ultimately, the band carved out a sound all their own, and the Poets of Rhythm can now be seen as the forefathers of the soul funk revival. After the Poets disbanded, JJ continued to push the boundaries of his aesthetic, blurring the lines between funk, Afro jazz, psych, prog rock, and krautrock in projects like the Whitefield Brothers and Carl Hector and the Malkins. All right, let's check in with JJ Whitefield over in Munich, Germany, and hear his story.
Okay, hello everybody. My name is Jan Weissenfeld. I record music. I'm a musician, composer under many different names, like the Poets of Rhythm, Whitefield Brothers, Carl Hector and the Malkounds, JJ Whitefield, Rodinia. I have a couple new projects coming up with new names, more new names. And yeah, I've been doing this since school, basically. And I got started when I was like early teenager, and I just got hooked on music. I don't know how exactly, but I come from a art inspired family. They did a lot of theater and stuff, so there was always art and music in the house. And I got my first stereo, a double cassette stereo, when I was like 13. Started buying records, was totally hooked on music, built my own instruments and amps because I couldn't afford any proper gear. I went to the electronics store and bought like kits for self-assembling, stuff like this. And yeah, so I made first, on the double cassette, I made first experiments with like recording. So I recorded on one tape and then played it back and playing with the playback on the next tape. So that was like my first attempts at multi-tracking, really, really lo-fi, but yeah, I loved it. So then I got my first electric guitar when I was about 15, I think. Before that, I played classical guitar for like, I started with violin actually in like when I was 8, played a couple years, got bored, learned classical guitar for like 2 years. Then I got an electric guitar. I convinced my mom to buy me an electric guitar. From that on, I just like did nothing else than music 24/7 basically, and buying a lot of records, playing the school parties, DJing the school parties with manipulated cheap turntables where I built an on-off switch in that I could stop and start the records. So yeah, and I had my classmate that came to my class when he was 15. He was living in South Africa before, but he's originally German, but his family relocated to Germany. So he came into my class and we kind of connected and started making music together. Yeah, my first big love was the whole George Clinton P-Funk universe, because he did records in the 80s, like solo records in the 80s. And that's around the time when I was buying records to play at the school dances. So I bought, I think, the one with Atomic Dog. Yeah, and this crazy sound universe got me totally hooked. And I tried to collect everything, all the Parliament, Funkadelic, all the side projects, Parlet, whatever, Brides of Funkstein, all this stuff. And in his troupe was also the famous bass player Bootsy Collins, who also made solo records. And when I found his, I think it's from 1981, his record Ultrawave, this was my holy grail, basically. So I still love this record. It's very creative. There's lots of cool stuff going on. And yeah, I slowly started making connections. I mean, this was all pre-internet, so you had to find out about this stuff through magazines or liner notes from records and stuff like this. So I made the connections, and I found out that Bootsy was, before he came to George Clinton, he was in the James Brown band. So that got me started, like, collecting as much James Brown stuff and related stuff as possible. It was kind of not easy to get in Germany back then. We had used record stores, but compared to the prices these records demand today, it was very expensive back then. So like a Parliament record was around $50 maybe. And today you can get the stuff, the later Parliament stuff, you can get for 15 bucks or 10, 15 bucks. So it was really hard to find and expensive. And it took me quite some time to get the collection together. But that's also what kept me going. And along the way, I just bought many records and later started in the late 80s, early 90s, I started going to the UK or to America on record buying trips. That's when I found out about the Funk 45s, these obscure groups that mostly recorded only one or two 45s in some shady basement studio, super lo-fi. And I totally burned for the sound. It was just the super, it was kind of my punk, because I grew up in the 80s, like my teenager years in the 80s. Everything was digital, keyboards, new wave, all this stuff. I mean, the deep funk stuff shares like a certain energy with punk music. It's musically, it's different. It's probably more sophisticated and than the straight punk music. But energy wise and recording wise, it's kind of the same. You know, it has the rawness and the energy of punk music. So that's what kind of drew me to it. Because like the stuff around me on the radio was all like smooth 80s. That there was no, that there, for me, there was not enough emotion in this. And when I heard the funk stuff, you know, it just blew my mind, like how how direct and like straight from the heart, from the soul it's coming. So when I heard this raw organic sound, it was, that was my punk basically. Yeah, with Boris Bobaral, my classmate, we bought a four-track tape recorder and borrowed some drum machines and keyboards and instruments and stuff and started making music in my mom's basement. And that was kind of the beginning of the Poets of Rhythm. And we went through a couple of different names and started a band with classmates, a drummer from our school and a bass player from our class, and started writing songs, recording demos and all this stuff. At the beginning, because George Clinton and Parliament Funkadelic was like our main inspiration, but he always had big bands with horns and keyboards and all this stuff. So it was kind of difficult to find enough people that liked the sound, that wanted to play this kind of style. And I was also like with the record collecting, was like trying to get fanzines from the P-Funk people. And in one of these typewriter written copy things was a George Clinton quote that said, the Meters were the only band that was funkier than Funkadelic. I went to the next record store, looked for the Meters, and found their 75 album, Fire on the Bayou. From there, I went back, tried to collect all the Meters records. And when I finally found the late 60s, early 70s stuff, like the three albums, their famous three albums, the first, I think it's called just the Meters, then the Look at Pie Pie and Chicken Strut. That was exactly the sound I was looking for. It was a four piece that was much easier to achieve. So we kind of went in this direction. We're totally on the New Orleans sound, collected all this stuff, even went to, Boris and me, we went to New Orleans for record shopping and stuff. Then school was over, a couple of people left, the bass player and the drummer left. Then we hooked up with other people, also added horns, got our first proper rehearsal room and stuff, and we named the band to Poets of Rhythm. And shortly after, recorded our first self-produced 45 on our own label. Boris and me, we had this Hot Pie and Candy imprint that only made like, I don't know how many, like 10 45s. Not that much, but like all self-made. Like I wrote to the record pressing plant and all this stuff. There was pre-internet, it was not that easy to hook up all this stuff to even find like a pressing plant. But it all worked out. We made the records, the first 45. And I gave it to a friend of mine who went to Hamburg and there was this small club called Soul Kitchen, and these guys just founded a label, and my friend gave them the 45, and a week later they called me and said, hey, you guys want to make an album for us. So that's how we got our first record deal. Like, we didn't even think about going this far, you know. We were totally like do it yourself basement style lo-fi self-pressed records. But then yeah, they offered us an album deal. We took it, we made the records. Made more records, went on tour, had fun, it was really nice. And late 90s, there started to occur like creative differences in the band. So the second long player, Discern Define, we did, that was already a big fight, like what are we going to do? I mean, there's a whole other story to this. This is going to be very long now, because it was originally recorded for Desco. They didn't want it because it was too experimental for them. So later we ended up on Quantum Ninja Tune with the same record, basically. We recorded two more songs or three more songs to make it a little more playtime. But it was recorded in 98, yeah. But then was released in 2001. So it took us like 3 years to complete this thing. And yeah, to make up for the album that Desco didn't want, to make up for this, I went to New York and recorded the Whitefield Brothers in the Raw. That was the makeup record for the Discern Define they didn't want. After the second album in 2000, that was released in 2001, the Poets of Rhythm was not existent anymore because everybody went his own way. So I continued with the Whitefeet Brothers for a couple years, and when that didn't quite work out as well, I started the Carl Hector and the Melcounts in 2007. Around 2007, I started recording for this project. This was kind of it was very stylistically very open, so I could do whatever I wanted to do, basically. And this band is still active. We still tour, we still make records. Around the same time also, I started working with Ebo Taylor, the highlife legend from Ghana. We took him to Germany and recorded two albums with him. And I went on a 4 or 5 year tour stint with him around the world, which was pretty cool. But then eventually, because I had a newborn child, it took too much of my time. So I quit this, but very thankful for the opportunity to work with this legend, because I learned a lot about African music. Just started doing more side projects and going in different directions, like from jazz to ambient to whatever I was interested in. Basically, the music I record is always the stuff I'm interested in, and I just take creative inspiration from, and then try to do it my own way, basically. So I did all kinds of stuff. And then still, I mean, I'm composing, producing, playing in different bands, in my own band. I have my own band and stuff. That's basically what I do.
Before we let you go, I know that you mentioned some of your favorite artists and albums at the beginning of the podcast, but I'd love to revisit some of those for our listeners. So if we can recap some of your favorite recordings off the top of your head, that would be great.
I just go with the stuff that like in the early days kind of like shaped my musical interests. All right, like as I mentioned before already, like a very influential record was Ultra Wave by William Bootsy Collins, his 81 album on Warner Brothers. And the first time I saw it, like the cover intrigued me because it's kind of weird, like in his like purple leather outfit with like beads in his beard and stuff like this. It looked like it's going to be a freaky record, and obviously it was. And I was used to this kind of sound from the whole Parliament Funkadelic stuff already, but this was just another thing. I don't know, it was less straightforward. Also, like George Clinton is not straightforward at all, because there's loads of stuff happening in the music. But this Bootsy stuff was even more freaky to me back then. And this kind of blew me away, kind of like melted my brain in a way, because like there was so crazy stuff going on I never heard before, basically. When I discovered the Meters, of course, like I like all their albums, but like the first three, like the raw quartet sound, four-piece band with just drums, bass, organ, and guitar, that was very influential on Boris and me, because that showed us that you, with a small band, you can make funky sound as well. Because before, like James Brown, he had a big band. And George Clinton, he had a big band as well, so with plenty of horns and keyboards, which was very hard for us to achieve back then because we didn't know the people, we didn't have the equipment and the room to do this. So like to finding a group that made incredible music as a four-piece was kind of a revelation. So that's what kind of kick-started our band, basically. Yeah, I mean, James Brown, there's so many good records, but maybe the Payback, because it's a double album, and I really love the production on there.
Can't be greedy. Ah, yeah. Give me some. know where I'm coming from. You can't be greedy, you gotta take some and leave some. I've never been a cat who won't all. I'm so glad I'm not that kind of guy.
And yeah, and then later in the 90s when I started to discover like different music, like African music and the crowd rock stuff and stuff like this. So then it broadened my tastes enormously because there was so much stuff that is kind of close to the funk rhythms and stuff, but still has like another level to it, especially the crowd rock stuff, which is very psychedelic and progressive at times. That kind of like like one of the most famous German bands, when I found their Tago Mago album in the late 90s, that completely blew me away because it's like, I mean, everybody knows that Jackie Liebezeit, their drummer, is influenced by James Brown drummers. So they had extremely funky rhythms and, but on top of this, like crazy harmonies and weird sound effect stuff. So that kind of like also influenced like what came out in Discern Define to like put different layers, not just like follow the straight funk stuff, but put different layers, incorporate like more jazzy stuff and more experimental stuff. So Can Tago Mago is one of the best records I know, basically in the groove stuff. But yeah, in the crowd rock, there's so much more, so many good records there, like Embryo, for example, a band I play in now, in the second incarnation of the band, because the original founder, he died a couple of years ago, and now his daughter keeps on like keeps the concept going, because it's a very open, improvised-based concept, and she does it, and I play with her, and that's probably the band I play the most live with, because we tour a lot, not now, but before pandemic and hopefully soon again. And this is totally open form. There's no set lists, no, basically no rehearsals. It's like really a free world jazz project. And it's a band from Munich and they did incredible records in the 70s. So that's one of my favorites. So I would pick one, Embryo. I couldn't tell which one now because there's so many good ones. Probably some Afro stuff, probably some Ghana High Life I would take, like Frimpong or Visa, probably Visa V band record. The minor key High Life stuff I love. just can throw in some artist names, definitely would take some Ethiopian stuff, so most likely some Mulatu Astatke. Most definitely a Sun Ra record. John Coltrane record. Thelonious Monk record. Lockdown the last year to do a lot of production, and I have two albums turned in that will be released sometime this year. One is called, the band is called Johnny. It's Ghanaian Afro rock project with the lead singer is the son of Ebo Taylor, who also played in the band with me in the when we did the Ebo Taylor thing. That's in the mastering right now, so it's gonna come out like in the next 3-4 months. With the pandemic now, it's kind of hard to set release dates because everything work, all the pressing plants work like half capacity and stuff like this, so it's kind of hard to set a thing, a release date now, but it's definitely gonna come out before the summer. Then for my man Egan from Now Again Records, I did a library record that's gonna come out, Ethiopian style one side and Italian psychedelic library music the other side. It's a pretty interesting combination and it turned out very well. That's gonna come out soon. Then yeah, the Poets of Rhythm reissue of Discern Defined, 20 year anniversary reissue on Deptone. It's gonna come out before the summer. Then the Embryo record we did last year, it's gonna come out on Madlib Invasion in sometime this spring. So there's quite a couple, quite a few releases in the pipeline right now. And yeah, always working on new stuff. I'm doing movie music right now, film scoring, which is pretty interesting. And it's pretty cool because there's no live gigs anyway, so I have plenty of time to work on this stuff. Then last year, no, 2019, that's 2 years ago almost, I did a jazz rock kind of solo record on the Munich-based Cryptox label. It's called Brother All Alone by JJ, credit to JJ Whitefield. Then also last year, just before the pandemic hit, we recorded new Carl Hector material. There's a full album, which is not finished yet, but working on it still. Yeah, so there's quite some stuff coming up. On social media, the most busy I am actually on my JJ Whitefield Instagram, And but also there's a Carl Hector Instagram and Carl Hector Facebook. I mean, there's Facebook pages for almost all my projects, but I must admit I'm not very busy on Facebook.
All right, JJ, well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure talking to you.
We'll talk down the road. Take care of yourself.
Good man. Thank you.
For an archive of Sounds Visual Radio episodes, please visit our website at soundsvisualradio.com. You can find us on Instagram at Sounds Visual Media. You can find us on Facebook at Sounds Visual PDX, or you can email us at soundsvisualradio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.